We are blessed. We are honored to bring in a man I've known along for a long time. I haven't talked to him in many, many, many a moon. I'm talking about Steve Lott, former trainer, assistant to Mike Tyson. Bottom line is, Steve, welcome to the show, man. How are you today, sir?
Terrific out here in Las Vegas. Cold and dry.
Sin City, Las Vegas. Now, I saw you had all kinds of memorabilia. You were doing a Facebook Live. What's up with that?
Well, for many years, the gentleman I worked with, Bill Caton and Jim Jacobs, with their fight film library, they were always hoping to have a boxing Hall of Fame, a real substantial one. Mm-hmm. So for the past 25 years, I've been collecting memorabilia in the hopes that a casino here in Las Vegas would say, here's 2,000 square feet, put the stuff in, let's get it going. So that's all my stuff. That's just great stuff.
You know, you bring up Jim Jacobs, and you brought a smile to my eye. And me and Bill Caton, we rumbled back and forth. But Jim Jacobs and I remember when Edwin Rosario was a developing fighter and I was a developing writer. And, you know, I mean, he was there. I mean, Jim Jacobs would answer the phone for me. He returned phone calls. He gave interviews. Of course, he considered the best handball player maybe of all time. But pound for pound, he was like an incredible athlete.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is everything you just said is correct. What's more important, which is tough to explain to people, he was much, much even better than that as a person. And what I mean by that is he and Cuss, and even Bill, their ability to understand human feelings and to be forgiving and to be considerate. Jim was incredible like that. And in the boxing, when we were managing, he was managing Rosario and Wilfred Benitez, at that time also, as assistant manager, there were some times I made horrendous mistakes, horrendous. But Jim would just call me in and say, Steve, let me explain why that was not right, in the most calm way. So that's the type of person he was, very brilliant and very forgiving.
Bill Caton, of course, he's got all the old fight films. I mean, Brain, Skill, and Guts, that was their production, correct?
That was my first. That was their production. That was the very first film that I was permitted to edit. That was around 1974, 75.
Can I jump in here for a second, Steve?
Go.
That was the best Ali film of all time. Keep going.
Well, I was not a master of integrating interviews and training of other people. I figured the film should just be on Ali, and because Bill and Jim had this incredible library of the fight films themselves, and even more important, Ali as Cassius Clay talking in the ring, out of the ring, being funny, I figured that was the way to go. It was very basic, but that's what fight fans at the time wanted to see. So that was my first production, Skill, Brains, and Guts, and it's just still wonderful just to look at it.
That's the film I recommend to everybody. Seriously, I mean, I like The Greatest, in which Ali portrayed himself, this and that. But Brain, Skill, and Guts broke it down because he wasn't fighting with all the skill at the end. He was fighting with, brains and guts and things like that. So I really thought that was an incredible movie, and I give you props for that. Now, all this memorabilia you've got together, is there a Las Vegas casino talking to you?
No. In the 60s and 70s, probably early 80s, before the corporations took over, there probably would have been a chance for an individual owner. Many of the casinos back then were run by the boys, the mob, and for them to say, hey, my son likes boxing. We're going to give you 3,000 square feet. We'll build it. We'll operate it. Put your stuff in here. Now with the corporations, all they want to know is how much rent are you going to pay and how much money you're going to put in to build out. So without a rent-free space, very tough. And the world is changing. Even Elvis Presley, who was perhaps one of the biggest stars of all time, especially here in Las Vegas, there was an Elvis Presley exhibit at the Westgate, which was the old Hilton,
right.
About 30,000 square feet, spectacular, went out of business. The Liberace Museum, out of business. The young kids who come here today, they're more into partying, drinking, dancing, going to a nightclub.
Legal weed?
I don't know about that. I'm sure there is. there's strip clubs. But to see a museum, the old-timers, yes. The young kids, no.
Okay. Steve Lott, you got another few minutes to stick around with us?
Sure.
Okay. Steve Lotz on the line, folks. Mike Tyson's assistant trainer, manager extraordinaire. Of course, he was at Tyson's side for a long, long time. Anyway, open phone lines around the planet. You can join us if you like. He's a surprise guest. I'm blessed to have him. 1-800-878-PLAY. That's 1-800-878-7529. Of course, the guilt-free, no commitment text line, 415-275-1613. That's 415-275-1613. You are tuned to Ring Talk live on Sports Byline and SB Nation Radio Sports.
Me and Mrs. Jones, we've got a thing going on and on. We both know that it's wrong. It's much too strong to let it go now. We meet every day at the same cafe, 6:30, and no one knows she'll be there.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Everyone said, I wish I was in your shoe, I wish I was in your shoe. The people, the hundreds of people that wish they were in my shoe, don't know the That's tenth right. of it. If they were in my shoe, they would cry like babies.
Peace up. A-Town. Yeah.
40 minutes past the hour. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live worldwide. 34 plus years now. You're inside looking at the world of boxing and MMA. A guy that's been around about as long as I have. He and I have been around since the God. We didn't want to go back that time because we'll be dating ourselves. But the bottom line is we remember the great Muhammad Ali and, of course, what presence he had. And, of course, and you know what's funny about Ali, or what's unique about Ali, is that when I toured with him in Asia, the two tours we did in Asia, he wasn't speaking all that much. But with just a few words and a handshake and a look and this and that, he spoke volumes, Steve.
Well, what years did you when was that Asia stuff?
90, we went 93 once, and we went 93 and 94.
Okay, well, I don't want to make you feel bad. I don't want to make you envious, okay? Yeah. I was at 4 Muhammad Ali fights. I was at the Ali Frazier second fight at Madison Square Garden filming. I was at Ali Shavers at Madison Square Garden filming the fight.
Yee.
I was at Ali Norton III at Yankee Stadium.
Yee.
Now, I hope you're sitting down. I was in Manila. Right. I went to Manila. My girlfriend and I, Jacobs and his girlfriend, went to watch Ali Frazier III. And every time the video's on, I see myself and my girlfriend sitting at ringside. Back then, I didn't understand how big that fight was, the immensity of the moment. But, of course, looking back now and listening to what boxing people say, it was an incredible moment. It was 10 o'clock in the morning in Manila. We're 10 o'clock New York time, prime time. And seeing myself and knowing I was there, and also knowing that Muhammad Ali was born January 17. Customato was born January 17. And I was born January 17. So that whole ball game, being in his fights, incredible. It was wonderful.
And so was Robin Ortiz, born January 17.
Ah,
so,
okay.
So here's what I got to tell you, is a good story, because you've got the greatest stories in the world. But I saw a moment with Muhammad Ali and Ken Norton. It was Ali, myself, Norton, and Foreman in Holmes. Joe Frazier wasn't there. He was the only one that wasn't there of that group. So when we were in Sacramento, California, Harold Smith is extracting some incredible fee from some auto dealership for us to show up there, okay? So we show up, and we're in the green room and this and that, and Norton's got a chip on his shoulder, man. He's always had an attitude for Ali. I mean, he just had a bad attitude. So we're about to go up on stage, the five of us, six of us about to go up on stage, and Ali looks over at Norton, and he reaches out to Norton, puts his hand on Norton's shoulder. He goes, you know that third fight, champ? I think you got the best of that one. And Norton started crying. Because Norton, it was so emotional. He had this pent-up anger inside of him, Steve. He couldn't believe it. I mean, we were together for like New Year's Eve 1999 in Miami, Florida, Ken Norton and myself. All he wanted to talk about, Ali, Ali, Ali. You know, his negative feelings on Ali. But Ali gave him those props, and everything changed.
That's a wonderful story. I have one, not quite as good, but about 5 years ago, Norton was very ill here in Nevada, outside of Las Vegas, at a a military hospital, and my buddy's old-timer said, let's go visit Ken. It's getting close to the end. Because I had a couple of hundred photographs of Norton in the ring, out of the ring, I put them on my laptop, brought him to the hospital, opened it up, started playing them one by one. He could not speak. He was unable to speak. But as I went through the photos and told him who was in the shot, you could see his eyes sparkle. You could see his eyes sparkle, putting him back 20, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. So I was very fortunate to meet him just before the very end and bring some little pleasure before the end.
Well, that's a better story than mine. I remember, you know, Norton fought in L.A. and San Diego, remember, and Mike Weaver fought up here. So, I, you know, us boxing fans, we got in the car, we drive to L.A. or we drive to Fresno, we drive to Bakersfield. We could do it back then. You can't do it nowadays. The boxing game is not what it used to be.
Well, not only that, shockingly, in the 1900s, early, in towns like Goldfield, Nevada, or Tonopah, Nevada, where there were huge fights with Joe Gans and Battling Nelson, there are films of guys coming off trains by the thousands heading to these towns in the boondocks to watch a fight. Now, I've driven through these towns. I don't see train tracks anywhere. How the hell did they build train tracks through the mountains? Back then, it was a different story. Driving across country in cars, in on trains, to see a fight. It doesn't happen anymore. You're right.
No, you know, you talk about great cities and fight locales. Coma, California, which is actually Daly City, California now, but it's right across the San Francisco border at Sickles and Mission out here in San Francisco. And that's where they had the big arenas where Jack Johnson fought, and there was like 100,000 people out there and all kinds of crazy stuff. So I went to the city of Coma and asked them for some history on boxing, and they said, we really don't have any. I said, you had all these great fights here. I said, you got to have something in the archive somewhere. They go, not really. What a waste.
It is, interestingly enough, there's a wonderful group that has a Jim Jeffries, former heavyweight champ, barn at a place called the Knott's Berry Farm in outside of L.A. Mm-hmm. And there's a big event there on February 17th honoring this great White Hope, as he was called back in 1910. So it's one of the very few places that honors fighters. It's very rare. You're right. It's very rare.
Okay. You know, it's an honor to have you on the show. What have you got a website people can hit you up on besides going to Facebook?
Yes, it's BoxingHallOfFame.com, just the way it sounds, BoxingHallOfFame.com.
Okay. I got it. You know, we mentioned Edwin Rosario a little bit earlier, and it was tragic, you know, that he went the way that he did. Of course, heroin at the end. You know, we've got an opiate crisis going on here in the United States, and it's not Puerto Rican, it's not blacks, it's white folks taking pain pills, and they're killing themselves, man, and they're going off to heroin. It is a crazy, crazy world right now. But the reason why I bring up Rosario was that I remember when he was young, he fighting guys like Edwin Virouet. Was it Edwin Virouet? Did you make that fight with Virouet?
Yes.
Yeah. Of course, that was on the Duran Benitez undercard, correct?
No, Benitez Duran. Rosario fought a guy named Adams.
Okay.
The Rosario Virouet fight was held at a casino here. It might have been the Aladdin. I forgot which one, but that was the main event. Rosario and Virouet. That was a sensational 3-round knockout. And if any of your fans watch it, Rosario does something in the ring that no fighter does today and very few fighters did in history. And that is a very simple technique. It's called weaving. It's like making a big letter U.
Yeah.
And Rosario did that with his back on the ropes, a big letter U. It's called the weave. Came up with a right hand. Ball game is over. Not one trainer today teaches that, ever. You'll never see that in a fight. You'll never see it in the gym.
Steve Loss, our guest, for us, of course, the man at big fights, no doubt about that, with Mr. Caton and Jim Jacobs. BoxingHallOfFame.com, he says, is the website. Now I go back to where the mob and Spilotro and guys like that ran Vegas. It was so much cooler back then. I used to stay at a place called the Westward Ho, which is right next to the Stardust. And, of course, Spilotro used to run the Stardust. And, I mean, you got comps, you got free food. Once the corporate guys took over, man, all the comps went away. The atmosphere went away. You couldn't drive your car up to a room anymore. What can I say? The corporations, they ruined Las Vegas.
Well, it's interesting. You know, back then, of course, it was very personal. You walked in, the guys knew your name. The gambling was the huge revenue maker for the hotels.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's not. Now it's retail, drinking and dining is the huge, much bigger than believe it or not, than the gambling. And it's very impersonal. You know, if you want to make something happen at the hotel and you try to reach someone today, you have to go through 44 levels of marketing administration. Back then, I mean, I was working with Jacobs and Caton in the 80s. You can call the president. He gets on the phone and says, okay, how can I help you guys? It doesn't work like that anymore.
Steve, the greatest place of all time during a fight in Las Vegas was the bar at Caesar's Palace.
Right. Yep.
Go on.
Well, back then, you know, it's changed completely. You know, the parking lot for the hotels was directly on the strip. Now it's $1 billion a square inch where they put restaurants and theme parks and all this stuff for gambling. But back then, the parking was right in front of the hotel. You got out, you walked in, you went to the bar, you watched the stuff, like you just said, and it was very casual. It was very casual. You didn't mess around back then, of course, because the boys ran everything, but it was a terrific time period. And I was fortunate just to be there the late 70s, early 80s as it was changing.
And no doubt about that, corporate world took over and the world of comps and things like that. And, you know, I guess they're making money, so they're doing what they wanted. And, of course, we didn't realize it, but, you know, Macau and Asia was starting to take a piece of their gambling money away because people didn't fly over here anymore.
Well, it's even more widespread than that. You know, Atlantic City was a two-hour drive from New York.
Yeah.
And then, of course, upstate Connecticut opened up with Mohegan Sun. And now, of course, in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, a huge Sands casino, which is only about 70 minutes from New York. And I was there with some boxing. It was packed, and it takes a lot of traffic away from Atlantic City, which is a tough place anyway, but it needed all of the support it could get. It doesn't get that anymore.
In Atlantic City, before Mike Tyson took on Michael Spinks, of course, he made Michael Spinks into, and put it like that, he made a believer out of Michael Spinks in 91 seconds, made a liar out of the truth and Carl the Tooth Williams in 93 seconds. But when Butch Lewis went into Mike Tyson's dressing room, were you there when Mike Tyson punched a hole in the wall?
Well, actually, many people confuse the Tyson-Spinks fight with the Tyson-Holmes fight.
Okay.
The Tyson-Spinks fight, Butch Lewis did walk in because he thought that the wraps were done improperly. The commissioner, Larry Hazard, walked in. We never had an entourage. It was Lewis, Mike, Hazard, Kevin Rooney, and I, and Cutman. And Butch Lewis is going crazy, and eventually, after about 5 or 6 minutes, Hazard said everything's okay. Mike was cool as a cucumber. The fight before that, actually two fights before, Mike fought Tubbs in between. The Holmes fight, Mike's warming up on the pads with Kevin Rooney, and as he usually does, he likes the glove, the knuckles in his glove, right up to the edge of the fabric so that there's no compression. It's right there. He goes up to the wall and just pushes on the wall a little bit just to get that space out of between his knuckles and the glove. And he's just pushing, and he just hits a little shot. All of a sudden, there's a crash. There's only five of us in the room. We turn around. There's chips flying all over the place. What the hell happened? I go up to the mic. I said, you okay? He said, yeah. I look out. I could see, eat at Joe's. Park here, you know. So the commissioner came over. Glove is fine. And Mike, of course, punched a hole in Larry Holmes. The next day, as they usually did, Sports Illustrated, Rich O'Brien calls and says, hey, anything interesting happened? Because our magazine, Sports Illustrated, comes out on Monday, tomorrow. I said, nothing much. But you heard about the hole in the wall. I told him the story. The next day, Sports Illustrated story, the stuff legends are made of. And they went into that story about Holmes and Tyson.
Okay. Real quick, I had a problem with Teddy Atlas. Teddy Atlas doesn't like you or me. How come?
Well, because we stayed with Tyson. Teddy knows that he made a huge mistake in leaving Mike, because if he had stayed, he would have made the millions and millions and millions of dollars that Kevin Rooney made. That's number one. Number two, back then, and even later on through today, he criticizes Mike as being a shooting star, and he warned Cuss, and that he says he's right. But after Teddy left, Mike got better and better and better. won the title in 86 over Burbick. Commercials on network television, Pepsi-Cola, Nintendo film, Nintendo games, Kodak film. Spokesperson for the New York City Police Department, the FBI, the DEA. European Associated Press votes Mike world's most popular athlete. Not best athlete, not even best boxer. This is all after Mike left Atlas and after Cuss died.
Yep.
So Teddy never refers to that period. Never, because it's embarrassing.
Good
Teddy's
point.
Told Cuss Mike's going to be no good. Cuss said he will. He'll develop. He'll mature. And Cuss was right. That's what is very, very disconcerting to Teddy, that he's incorrect and he lost out on all that money.
You know, Steve Lott, nobody can put it to the boxing fans like you can. I thank you so much for your time. BoxingHallOfFame.com is his website. And, man, you can come back. I wish you would come back regularly. I would love to have you all the time.
Well, that's what the girls in the massage parlors told me here.
Yeah, well, those happy ending massages, I'm not into them. Sorry.
Thank you.
Steve Lott, folks, on Ring Talk Live Worldwide, the former co-manager of Mike Tyson, his right hand, his assistant. When Mike needed something, guess what? Mr. Steve Lott got it for him. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide on Sports Byline and SB Nation Radio Sports.
Walking down the street, smoggy eyes.